Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest tonight grew up in Indiana and became a journalist. He's been a broadcaster on radio and TV for 35 years. His was the voice that described Neil Armstrong's landing on the moon for ABC Radio. He's the author of 7 books, and his radio series Second Thoughts are heard daily on 1,100 radio stations worldwide. His basic message is, happiness is a choice. His name, Mort Krim, and I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
You're listening to Anything is Possible with Jack Krasula, sponsored by Trust in Us on News Talk 760 WJR.
We're talking to Mort Krim, who's heard daily on 1,100 radio stations worldwide. Mort, welcome. It's an honor.
Thank you, Jack. Nice to be with you, as always.
Can you start by talking about your childhood and your parents?
I had a wonderful childhood. Not affluent. Dad had very little money, but he gave my sister and me, as did my mother, the things that I think count most in life, which is a good sense of values, a strong faith, belief in ourselves, and the conviction that we could really accomplish anything we wanted to in life, and that what was really important was to make our lives count for something bigger than ourselves. Dad was a clergyman, and he pastored in Indiana and Ohio when I was growing up, so I did spend quite a few of my formative years in both of those states, and considered for a time becoming a minister. There had been so many ministers in my family, my father, his twin brother, my aunt was a medical missionary to Africa. I had cousins and brothers-in-law who were ministers, and eventually I made the decision to become a journalist, which I think has a lot in common with teachers and ministers and politicians, judges and lawyers. I think all of us are in the business, hopefully if we do it right, of trying to find the truth and apply it to daily life.
What did you learn from your mom?
Well, I learned from my mother to keep my room straight. She was a good disciplinarian and fastidious in the way she ran our household. I also learned compassion and to do the right thing. I think she and Dad both shared those values of honesty and integrity.
How did you get your first break in radio and TV?
Well, I started in radio when I was not quite 17 years old. I was just out of high school, and I drove around in a little 1939 Plymouth, which, boy, how I wish I had that car today. It'd be worth a fortune. But that was my one of my first cars, and I drove around to every place that I would see a radio tower sticking up in a cornfield down in southern Illinois or southeast Missouri, down in that area of the world. I would stop and go in and ask for a job. And, of course, I would always be told the same thing. You've got to have experience and you're too young. And I did have a pretty decent voice, even at that age. And so finally I found a station in Blytheville, Arkansas, that was really hard up for an announcer. They had had a guy quit and another one had been fired. And so the owner of the station was actually sitting at the microphone running his own board and doing his own programming. So he was sort of backed into a corner, and I guess he would have hired anybody off the street, and that turned out to be me.
What's the difference between radio and TV for a broadcaster?
It's an interesting question, and there is a considerable difference. I've always used this analogy that television is football and radio is singles tennis. And I say that because television very much is a team operation. You know, you could be the best broadcaster in the world, but you're still dependent upon the people who run the cameras, the people who operate the teleprompters, you know, all of the technical aspects, the production, the assignment editor, the reporters who go out and gather the stories. But when you sit down to do a radio broadcast, it's you and your computer and a microphone. And it really is a like a singles game of tennis. The entire responsibility is on your shoulders, and that's also exhilarating, but it's very sobering to realize that you have the full responsibility for what goes on the air.
How did you get your first break in TV?
Well, I had known a guy that I was in college with, actually, who got a job as a continuity writer, writing commercials and promotional ads and so forth for a little station in Rockford, Illinois, WTVO. And he called me one day. He knew that I was trying to break into the TV announcing business. And I drove over to Rockford and got the job, and was only on that job for 3 months before it was time to pay my obligation to Uncle Sam, and I ended up in the Air Force for 4 years. But I was fortunate to do both radio and television for the military. I was assigned to information services because of my background, and got to produce, write, direct, produce, and announce various news spots for Armed Forces Radio and for the Pentagon and for the Strategic Air Command during my entire 4 years. So it was, for me, a very satisfying and very useful 4 years of my life.
For our young listeners out there who might be interested in a career in radio or TV, what advice would you give them, Mort?
Well, I think the best advice I could give anybody is not to specialize too soon. If you want to be a competent broadcaster, first of all, learn about life, because particularly in the news field, if you want to be a journalist, you need to know something about everything. You need to be a generalist. You need to know about politics. You need to know about science. You need to know about sociology and psychology, and you certainly need to be good at the word crafting business. You need to know grammar and English, and have a knowledge of literature. And I've found over the years that every single thing I have learned about anything has at some point been useful to me in my role as a writer and as a broadcaster. I think it's a mistake to focus too soon on the journalism aspect of it. You can teach somebody to write, and you can teach somebody to interview. Those kinds of things, if they have any talent at all, can happen rather quickly. That's the specialization part. But before you get into that aspect of it, get a good general education, a good background in the liberal arts would be my recommendation.
We're talking to Mort Krim, who in 1995 was awarded the Gold World Medal as America's Best Radio Personality. And I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
This is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR with Jack Krasula.
We're talking to Mort Krim. Mort, we're on the phone with you. Where are you this evening?
Well, right now I'm in Fort Pierce, Florida, which is down the south of Vero Beach, north of West Palm. We're at a marina on our boat. We decided to bring the boat down. We normally live at Amelia Island, which is in North Florida near Jacksonville. And we just decided to do a little cruising this winter. I have the V berth, the front berth in this boat, set up as a studio in a newsroom so that I can broadcast literally from anywhere as long as I'm at a marina that has internet service. And so every morning I'm up at 4:30 writing and preparing to deliver a national 5-minute newscast that goes out at 7:30 Eastern Time. It is not heard currently in the Detroit area, although I think it's on in Ann Arbor and it's on in Grand Rapids and several other places in Michigan. We hope soon it'll be on in Detroit, but we're enjoying the combination of working hard and doing something that's satisfying career-wise, and at the same time being in an environment that makes it feel like I'm on vacation even when I'm not.
In 35 plus years, what's the single biggest story you've ever covered?
I suppose you'd have to break that down into categories, but overall, I think it was probably the space program. Because of my background in aviation, being a pilot and having served in the Air Force and covered the space program out of Vandenberg Air Force Base, it was kind of a natural for me to gravitate toward space reporting. And so when I joined ABC Radio Network in New York as a national correspondent, one of my first assignments was to the space program. and I was sent down to Cape Canaveral for all of the launches, beginning with Gemini 3, right through Apollo 12. So I was there at the Cape for the historic launching of Apollo 11, which, of course, was the first moon landing. That was an incredible time in the history of our country. You know, we were coming through the Vietnam War. We had the campus turmoil. We had the big city riots. We had all those terrible assassinations of John Kennedy, of Robert Kennedy, of Martin Luther King. The '60s were a turbulent time. It was Kent State, and the space program became not just a scientific marvel in its own right, but it became a kind of a rallying point around which the whole country could get excited. It was something positive. It was something that we could wave the flag and say, "Yes, we're doing this and we're doing it right." And so it was historic, but it was also symbolic, I think, for the nation at a very difficult time in our history.
Which two or three people that you've covered have impressed you the most?
Well, that's always an interesting question. The president that I covered most closely was Lyndon Johnson. Traveled with him on a couple of significant trips, including a around-the-world trip. He was a powerful, bigger-than-life figure, and whether you agreed with his policies or not, he was just an impressive man. When he walked into a room, I think just his size alone and that Texas dynamism that he projected, you had to be impressed by Lyndon Johnson. Bishop Tutu of South Africa is certainly one of the most memorable people that I've ever interviewed, a man whose people had been through so much during the terrible days of apartheid, and yet he had this loving, Christ-like spirit of forgiveness and acceptance, no bitterness. And I thought, this is truly like Mother Teresa, somebody who is an example to all of us of how we should live our lives, and particularly those of us who call ourselves Christians, how we should reflect what he certainly reflected, that love for people.
They tell a story about Ronald Reagan. He had lunch one day with Bishop Tutu, and after lunch he came back and they said, "Well, how was lunch with Bishop Tutu?" And he said, so-so.
Reagan did have a great sense of humor, didn't he?
Why don't we have more positive news on TV and radio?
Well, that's a question that is often asked, and I guess every journalist has had to deal with that question. I often ask myself that question, and I think the simple answer is that good things are the ordinary, and news is the extraordinary or the out of the ordinary. And I always illustrate it this way. If 3,000 airplanes take off and land safely this morning, this evening, that's not news. We expect that to happen. But if one of them crashes, then that's news because it's out of the ordinary. And if you stop and think about it, I guess it's a good thing that the bad things that are happening in life are still unusual enough to qualify as newsworthy. Now, having said that, I think all of us in journalism have a responsibility, and I try on certainly in my daily commentaries and in my morning radio show to find those positive stories, because I think we do have an opportunity and an obligation to inspire people as well as presenting them with the sobering realities that are pretty harsh and pretty difficult to accept.
A lot of people that have been in this game for decades get bitter and they see the glass as half full. With all the challenges and the negative news, how have you stayed so positive?
Well, ultimately, I think it's a choice, Jack. It begins perhaps with the fact that I grew up in a home that was very positive. My father was a man, and my mother was a woman of tremendous faith, who believed that ultimately history is God's story, and no matter how it appears at any given moment in history, it's ultimately going to be okay, and our responsibility is not to worry about the future, but to do the best we can with the present and live up to our obligations to each other as human beings. So I grew up in that atmosphere of looking at life with trust and with faith, not worrying about the outcome. That's not my responsibility. My responsibility is just to be the best citizen of this world that I can be and be responsible to my neighbor and to my brother and sister. I think beyond that, I recognize that happiness and optimism really are choices. And you mentioned the glass half full or half empty. How we look at something and how we state it really is a matter of perspective and choice. And we've all known people who, no matter what the circumstances were, they're always going to see it in the most negative way. There's a wonderful story about the guy who came into work one day, and he was just all glum and down in his shoes, and somebody asked him what was wrong, and he said, oh, he said, 2 weeks ago, he said, I won the $3 million lottery. And they said, won the lottery? Well, then why are you so down in the mouth? And he said, well, he said, last week an uncle died and left me $6 million that I wasn't expecting. And they said, my goodness, what, you know, why are you so down? He said, well, here it is Tuesday already, and this week nothing. So, you know, there are people who, no matter what is happening, will always choose to see the negative. And conversely, there are people who, no matter what's happening, will always see the best of it. And I've just made it a choice in my life to try to always focus on the good.
It's like your neighbors down there that are complaining because it only was 67 degrees yesterday or something, right?
You don't hear it from me.
We're talking to Mort Krim. Diane Sawyer of ABC once said, Mort's essays are like the voice of an old friend. Kind, steady, encouraging. Gentle wisdom from an instant Ella. And I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
Now back to Anything Is Possible with Jack Krasula, sponsored by Trust in Us on News Talk 760 WJR.
Welcome back. We're with Mort Krim, whose Second Thoughts is heard daily on 1,100 radio stations worldwide. Mort, what is Second Thoughts, and how did it come to be?
Well, it actually goes to the heart of what you just asked me earlier about positive news. Why don't we have more positive news? And I recognize that there isn't nearly enough positive news, and so I decided to create a format, you know, a two-minute piece that could be dropped into to any kind of a format, and we're on stations that play jazz, we're on news talk stations, we're on country stations, we're on religious stations, and it seems to fit with just about any format.
What are your favorite couple Second Thought stories that you'd like to share with us?
You know, it's. I will tell you, Jack, that I have written over 6,000 of these since I started the feature back in 1993, and I guess I would have to say my favorite is always in the last five or six that I've written. But I guess my favorites tend to be the ones that come out of my personal experience, and I always try to draw a moral or use these. I call them parables. See, I had the advantage of growing up in the church and hearing my father deliver his homilies every Sunday morning and sometimes two or three times a week. And he was a great storyteller. He knew how to take a story, or he would call it an illustration, and bring it down to a point. And I think I learned that technique from him. One of the ones that comes to mind is a piece that I did about my love of flying. And I've been flying since I was a teenager. And how I sometimes have envied the airline and the corporate pilots who get to fly every day for a living. And in this piece, I told how my wife suggested that if I did that all the time, if it were my job instead of my passion, I might eventually get tired of it. And then I went on from that to talk about Robert Frost, who was describing, you know, his job was describing the wonders of nature. And one night after he'd visited friends at their summer home in Connecticut, the wife exclaimed, Mr. Frost, isn't that a beautiful sunset? And the famous poet with a twinkle in his eye replied, sorry, I never discuss business after dinner. And the point I made with that is that we're fortunate in if we can make a living doing something that we would do even if nobody paid us to do it. The happiest people in the world are those who can't tell where work ends and play begins. So those are the kinds of things that I try to do, sometimes with current news stories, sometimes with anecdotes out of the past, often with things from my own personal experience, but always with an eye to drawing some conclusion or some moral, some thought for the day that I call the takeaway that people can take with them.
When we come back, we'll ask Mort Krim where he keeps finding daily stories. And I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
You're listening to Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Once again, here's your host, Jack Krasula.
We're with Mort Krim. Mort, you've come up with over 6,000 positive stories. Where do you keep finding them?
There is really no one place, or even one, or even five places, or 10 places, anywhere I can find them. I attended, my friend Pete Wallmeyer was having a book signing when his book came out, and because he was doing regular daily columns and I was doing daily radio pieces, I asked him, I said, Pete, I said, where do you get your ideas? And with a grin, he said, I steal them. And of course he was kidding. And he said, well, here's what I mean. He said, if you steal from another author, of course that's plagiarism. But he said, if you steal from six authors, that's research. So I guess in this business, we do a lot of research. We get ideas from other people, clearly. You know, Shakespeare said there's nothing new under the sun, and I believe the book of Ecclesiastes also reflected that even before Shakespeare. There is nothing new under the sun, and what we're trying to do is pull out ideas and say them in fresh ways, say them in new ways, even sometimes say them in the old ways. That connect with people. I clip magazines, I clip newspapers, I go to the internet, I keep my ears and eyes open every day. I may see something in a restaurant or in a store or overhear something that triggers an idea. I may see something walking down the street. I may just have a thought pop into my head when I'm driving, and I keep a little tape recorder handy sometimes so that I can just, you know, say it into the recorder so that I won't forget it. I'm constantly keeping files and building files, and I have people doing research for me so that when it comes time to write these pieces, I really never am at a loss for ideas.
You've written a series of books. You have a series of speeches that you give, these radio message. Mort, what's your basic message you're trying to sell?
Well, I have it printed on a card that I sometimes hand out, and it's really very simple. Happiness is a matter of choice. I learned that very early in my life and in my career. Of course, I was taught that as a child, growing up in a religious home. But I also discovered it in the real world as a journalist. I would interview people who seemingly had everything. We're talking about rock stars, athletes, actors, business executives, people who had money, who had fame, who had security, who had all of the material things that should make life wonderful, and sometimes you would find these people were miserable and even in the process of destroying themselves. And then I would interview somebody who was on welfare, on a limited pension, Social Security budget, or somebody who had just lost a home to a hurricane or a flood, and find in that person a basic contentment and happiness and even joy that could not be explained by their circumstances. And I finally came to the realization that my dad had been right in his sermons all those years, that happiness is not something that we gain by an accumulation of material things or successes. Happiness is something that we choose, and it really comes about by the way we live our lives. And I think fundamentally it's the return that we get on making our lives count for somebody or something bigger than us and basically serving other people. So that's using a lot of words to come back down to my basic premise that happiness is a matter of choice, not circumstance.
If we have a listener tonight who's lost their job, a spouse has left them, they've just been diagnosed with cancer, they say, that's great, I wish I could do it, but Mort, I can't be happy.
Yeah, I don't mean to be glib either, because life does get very hard. And, you know, I lost a spouse to cancer, lost my father and my uncle to cancer, both of whom were very, very close, very dear to me. My mother currently is suffering Alzheimer's. She's in the final stages. I mean, life is full of tragedy and sadness and loss. And believe it or not, I actually got fired from a job once. And so I know the pain and the hurt and the fear and the anxiety and that come with life's difficulties and life's tragedies. There are no easy answers, but I think all of us have to work at this process of finding happiness and finding contentment and finding joy. And I know that there are low spots in life when it seems that that's absolutely impossible to do, but we don't really have much choice, do we, Jack, except to just keep trying and keep applying those principles that ultimately work. And that doesn't mean that we're going to be that we're going to be full of joy all the time. Certainly not. There are going to be times when, you know, no matter how positive we are and no matter how hard we look for the silver lining, we're going to be sad and we're going to be down in the dumps. And I think the question is not whether we're down, but whether we are able to crawl back up again.
At times, Mort, it seems our country has lost its compass, its values. How do we get these back?
Well, I don't think, to speak of the country having lost its values and its direction is a pretty encompassing and sweeping statement, and I know we all tend sometimes to feel that way. And yet, as I go around meeting with individuals and groups and organizations, I find that there is a very strong sense of what's right and wrong in this country. I just think we have to tap into that more. We have to express it more. We have to take advantage of the goodness and the ethics that exist in this country. And again, not focus so much on, when a mighty company like Enron falls and you discover that there's corruption at the top and then you see it in other businesses, the tendency is to think, well, gee, all businessmen are corrupt. Or if a politician does something wrong, well, all politics is corrupt. And the fact of the matter is there are an awful lot of good people in all of these jobs and all of these positions at all levels of society who are trying really hard to do the right thing to make it a good country. And they don't get the attention, they don't get the publicity, they don't make the news, but they do make a difference.
Mort Krim, you're a great listener. Can I learn how to become a great listener?
Well, for you to ask me that question, Jack, I find ironic because you're one of the best when it comes to listening to people. I think that's how you were so successful in business, and I think it's why you're successful with this radio program. Listening is an art, and it is important, and I think the best speakers and the best writers and the best interviewers, look at Larry King. This man knows how to listen. Barbara Walters, who some people make fun of Barbara, but I think she's one of the best interviewers that's ever set in a television seat. Ted Koppel, my good buddy from ABC days, just a superb interviewer. All of them have that one thing in common. They know how to listen. And you know where I think it starts? I think it starts with a genuine interest in people. You can't fake it. If I'm really interested in you, then I really want to know about you, and I really want to hear what you have to say. And it's that genuine interest in people and really being concerned about them that opens our ears and our hearts up and allows us to really hear what they're saying.
The only constant in life today is change. With globalization, the change these big three is going through, the union entitlements everywhere, how do you embrace and accept change?
Well, I don't embrace it all, and I think there are some things where we need to try to hold the line against it, but truly, it's going to happen, and it always has. I think the difference today is it's happening with such lightning speed, and technology and globalization are pushing us to change maybe faster than we sometimes think we can. It just takes our breath away. I don't have a simple answer to that, Jack, except I think to recognize that those things that we can't control, we just can't let them control us. The only thing we can control is our response. And if change is occurring and I don't like that change, I have to just look at myself and say, okay, I can't control the change. You know, I can't change the fact that maybe I lost my pension and now I'm going to get only a third of what I thought I was going to get through the government pension program. Some of those things, they're going to happen and I can't change it. How can I respond to it? How can I react to it? How can I prepare myself to deal with it? And I think there's where we have to turn the focus inward and say, if I can't control what's happening, how do I control my attitude and how do I control my responses in a way that are beneficial to me?
We're talking to Mort Krim, and I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
You're listening to Anything Is Possible with Jack Krasula, sponsored by Trust in Us on News Talk 760 WJR.
We're back with Mort Krim, who's written 7 books. Mort, what do the happiest people you know have in common?
They are always thinking about other people. They're people who serve. Sometimes they do this through their work. It's very obvious that people who are in teaching or the medical profession or the clergy have an obvious built-in professional opportunity to serve others, people in the restaurant business. But I think all of us, no matter what our profession, whether we work on the assembly line or work in a farm field or sit at a computer all day, throughout our lives and throughout our days and our weeks, in our relationships with other people, we have an opportunity to think about others and to think what we can do, what we can give, how we can serve. And when enough people do that, it makes a difference in the community. It makes a difference in our own families, and it will make a difference in our world.
Let's talk about a few of the books. Good News for Tough Times. What's the basic message of that one?
Well, that book was written after 9/11. In fact, the first chapter in the book is an essay that I wrote specifically keyed to the events of the destruction of the World Trade Center and the subsequent tragedies of that particular day. The message of that book, I guess, is pretty much the same as what Dr. Schuller, you know, he's got a great line that tough times don't last, tough people do.
Yes.
And I think we do need to look at life as being a continuum that includes both good and bad and ups and downs and times when we're on the mountaintop, and that's true for nations as well as for individuals. And then times when we're down in the valley, and times when we can't see any way out. And through all of that, I think the good news is that the human spirit, linked to a faith in something greater than itself, has always, throughout history, been able to prove not only adequate, but capable of being victorious over even the most difficult circumstances.
Another book, Take Off and Fly, Living Positive in a Negative World.
Well, I use as an illustration quite a few aviation illustrations in there. You know, some people are like the person who gets in an airplane and just taxis it around on the ground all day, afraid to leave the ground. That wouldn't be very satisfying to me as a pilot. That wouldn't be very exhilarating. I would eventually get pretty bored. And I think some people live their lives like that. They have the capability. They have the power. They have all of the things at their hands. You know, the controls are there, but they just taxi around on the tarmac of life, afraid to rev up that engine and head down the runway and take off and really see how high they could go and how much they could achieve. So Take Off and Fly, Living Positive in a Negative World is an audio book that really is telling people, don't settle for that. You know, just spread your wings and rev up your engine and see what you can do, and you'd be amazed at the heights that you can reach.
Another book, How to Be as Terrific as Your Dog Thinks You Are.
Well, that's the most autobiographical book that I've written. It is a collection of stories about two dogs that came into my life at a very important time. One was our son's Doberman, and the other one was our daughter's Doxy, two very contrasting dogs in size and temperament. And the Doberman being the sweet, lovable, person-oriented dog, and the little Doxy thinking he was 10 feet tall and could really run the Doberman around. But I learned so much from those dogs after my wife passed away from cancer, and the kids were off to college, and the dogs had been left with me, and so they became my companions and my buddies and my solace during a very low period in my life. And in observing those dogs, I learned so much about enthusiasm, about trust, about playfulness, all of the things that we can learn from our pets. And so I took these lessons and, in storytelling form, put them into a book.
How can we learn more about your books, your speeches, etc.?
Well, I guess the best way is to go to the internet, mortcrim.com, mortcrim.com. It's all one word. We'll take a person to our official company website, and from there are links that will take you to pages that will describe my speeches and my schedule, and also will tell you how to obtain the books and what the various titles are, and kind of an update on what I'm doing these days.
Some of our listeners tonight are spending their lives right now as caregivers. Their loved ones has cancer, like your late wife, Nikki, or a loved one has Alzheimer's. What encouragement would you give the caregivers?
Well, I'll tell you, first of all, Jack, that these people are my heroes. You know, I've covered astronauts, and I've covered sports figures who've accomplished incredible things and seen a lot of people do a lot of heroic accomplishments. But there is no one who ranks higher in my book of personal heroes than those people, you know, that husband who works all day and then comes in the evening and takes care of a critically ill wife, that wife who spends her days working and maybe having to work and also take care of an ill child, the people with aging parents. These people are, I think, saints. And I think all the encouragement that we can give them, all of the assistance, all of the love, all of the admiration and respect, they deserve it all. And sometimes I think I'm not in any position to give advice to these people. They're the ones who should be giving advice to me about how they do it, because I see such reservoirs of courage and strength and love and goodwill among the caretakers and people in our world who are doing that. Sometimes against just incredible odds, you know, without enough money, without enough time, without enough support, and yet they do it. It's an amazing story, and one that doesn't get told nearly enough.
What role has faith played in your life?
Well, a big one. I'm rather private about my faith. I don't go out and try to tell other people what they should believe or how they should express that faith. But in my own personal life, I can tell you that it's my fundamental belief that there is a creator and that he did place us here for a purpose, that we're not just an accidental co-location of atoms that has no reason for being. And I think our fundamental reason is to serve others. And really my whole outlook, my whole approach, my whole message is predicated very solidly on a belief that it matters, that we were put here for a purpose, and that there is a power to whom we are ultimately responsible.
In the last minute that we have, what advice would you give to our young listeners tonight?
Stay hopeful. I find an unbelievable amount of optimism among young people, despite the kind of world in which they're growing up. And these kids are aware. They know what's going on in Iraq, and they know what's going on with the global economy, and they know what's going on with the so-called clash of civilizations. They realize it's a dangerous world, but they still face it because young people just naturally have an optimism and a sense of hope for the future. I would encourage them, don't lose that. Nurture it, keep it, because you're going to need it even more. And it's so easy as you grow older and are exposed to more of this through the media and through your own daily experiences, to lose that edge and eventually to become even cynical and bitter. And that's not productive. That leads to a very unhappy life. And, you know, we've never minted a coin or erected a statue or issued a stamp to celebrate the life of a cynic. It just isn't productive. It's the people who can maintain that hope and that optimism and that enthusiasm of youth throughout their lifetimes that really make a positive difference in the world.
Mort Krim, thanks for doing this. Thanks.
My pleasure,
also,
Jack.
Thanks also for the phenomenal daily vitamin and sunshine that you give millions of us each day.
Thank you, Jack.
Please join me next Sunday. Until then, I'm Jack Krasula. Thanks for listening, and make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Spohol.